We need the different thoughts, the different mindsets, the different perspectives. I said, we need you.
All right, here we go. Episode number 186 of Future Proof. I'm your host, Bill Sheridan. Glad to be here. Glad that you're here. We got a good show for you today. I'm going to get to it here in just a second. First, I want to let you know that this week's show is made possible by our preferred providers. And these are folks, we actually like to think of these folks as partners, right? These are the organizations, the relationships, the partnerships that allow us, the MACPA, to do a lot of the great stuff that we do for our profession, including this podcast. But these partners, they do way more than that, right? They're doing things that we believe can help y'all become a little bit more future ready and thrive in this ever-changing world. And help is the key word here. They truly, truly do want to help. So please reach out to them, find out more about what they can do and how they can help you, because they can. You'll find more about all of our preferred providers on our website. That's at macpa.org/showcase. So it's February. Black History Month, our opportunity really to pay homage to the trailblazing Black Americans who helped build this country and whose contributions are in many ways really the story of us, right? All of us. In accounting and finance, that means folks like John Cromwell Jr., who became our country's first Black CPA in 1921. There's Mary Washington Wiley, who in 1943 became the nation's first Black woman to earn the CPA designation. More locally, we've got Benjamin King Sr., Maryland's first Black CPA in 1957. Cristanta Ricks Johns followed in 1970 as the first Black woman to become a CPA in Maryland. Just, you know, a lot of respect there, a lot of history to celebrate this month. Just a lot of history. And there's going to be even more next month, right, with Women's History Month. And these celebrations, in my mind anyway, they're opportunities really to focus, I think, less on our differences and more on what brings us together. They're great reasons to spend even more time having conversations about diversity, equity, inclusion. And let's face it, our profession needs to be having way more of these types of conversations. So true story here, slight tangent related though, but not too long ago, I posted something on Twitter about diversity and equity and inclusion and the importance of DEI efforts to our profession. And someone responded with, and I'm paraphrasing here, I can't remember his exact words, but the essence of his response was this. He said, "We all know that DEI is just code for discrimination against white men." And I mean, what do you say to that? I was speechless, literally. I mean, just sitting there, jaw on the floor, almost unable to comprehend what I was reading, because that's the exact opposite of the spirit of DEI, right? I mean, the goal of DEI, in my mind anyway, is not to exclude anyone. The goal of DEI is to include everyone, to the best of our abilities, to make sure everyone has an opportunity to take a seat at the table and make their voice heard. That, to me, is the beauty of DEI. It's all inclusive. Nobody gets left behind. And it's not just about race or gender or sexual orientation. It's about all of that, yes, but it's about so much more, right? It's about experience and mindset and education and age and the whole package. And the idea being that we should try to open the doors and surround ourselves with as much of all of that as possible. Inclusion, really, I think, is the key word in that phrase, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it raises the question, I mean, how do I individually join this effort and become more inclusive? And I think a big part of that answer comes down to a single word, and that word is allyship. It's a word I first heard a few years back from my friend and colleague, Kimberly Ellison Taylor. You've probably heard the name by now. She wrote a great article about the concept in which she offered up this definition, right? She offered up this definition of allyship. An ally, she said, is a person who is compassionate and actively seeks ways to advance, encourage, and empower others, right? Great definition. Oh my God. It's not about us. In other words, it's about other people. Here's what Kimberly writes. She says, quote, "I am convinced that before you can be a true ally, you must be a good person who actively seeks to understand the challenges that others face. This mindset is not based on any specific diverse characteristic, but rather on the fact that you have chosen a side, the human side." And she goes on to say, quote, "In these unpredictable times, allyship is needed more than ever. It's easy to drown in pessimism, but I urge us to focus on the good deeds we can do each day and to recommit ourselves to being good people and good team members. We can't change the world, but we can change our world. As allies," she says, "what if we demonstrated compassion by checking on and looking out for others, right? For one another, just because. We can start by thinking about the day in the life of somebody else's life. For example, what if you woke up tomorrow and had swapped places with anyone else? Would that be okay? Better yet, if you're a leader, would you want to report to you?" Good question. End quote there from Kimberly Ellison Taylor. Here's some examples of from Kimberly, again, of what that might look like in action. Okay, actual examples from her article. So here's number one. She says, you're in a meeting, and you realize that Jessica is missing. She mistakenly didn't receive an invitation, and the topic is an area related to her assignment. You send a note to the organizer and or mention that Amy is missing from the invitation list and should be included. When the mistake is noted, you then send Amy a text and ask if she can join the meeting. If she's unable to attend, you offer to bring her up to speed on any actions, right? Okay, here's another example. Steve can't make an update meeting. It's his day off. Fortunately, he and you are working together on the project. When you give the update, you know that both you and Steve are working well together and then give the status. Or here's another example, number three from Kimberly. She says, a team meeting usually involves many interjections and contributions. You notice that Stephanie isn't able to get a word in. So you say, Stephanie, it looks like you have a few thoughts to share on this topic. What's on your mind? And one more example, really powerful. About 15 minutes into that same team meeting, Lisa makes an observation that is not acknowledged. 30 minutes in, Richard and Katie both offer the same thoughts as Lisa's earlier observation. So you say, great point, Richard and Katie. It sounds like Lisa agrees. Lisa, is this what you were thinking about earlier? Right? That's just a few simple examples of what inclusion looks like. Including others. And it starts with looking out for others. I just thought that those were really kind of brilliant examples. And that all kind of serves as a long-winded, but great foundation for this week's show, right? And my guest this week, my guest is Jessica McLean. And that all serves as kind of a long-winded, granted, but a great foundation for this week's show. And my guest this week, my guest is Jessica McLean. And really, where to start with Jessica? She's CFO of Girl Scouts Nation's Capital. She represents Maryland as an at-large member of the AICPA's Governing Council and serves on the AICPA Foundation Board of Trustees and the AICPA Student Recruitment Committee. She's also a board member with the Maryland Association of CPAs Foundation, the Greater Washington Society of CPAs, the Towson University Accounting Advisory Board, the list goes on. As a young leader, she's won numerous awards in Maryland and throughout the rest of the country, including being named one of the MACPA's Women to Watch for 2021, which actually brings me to my conversation with Jessica. She spoke as part of a panel discussion during the MACPA's 2022 Women to Watch Awards. And she spoke there about inclusion and its many forms, what it looks like, and its importance to our profession. And as a Black CPA and woman of color and a leader in our profession, Jessica's voice and insights, I think, are perfect ways to celebrate not only Black History Month, but also our quest, really, to find greater diversity and equity and inclusion in our profession. So I wanted to sit down with Jessica and talk about all of that, and we did. And so I'm glad you're here this week to hear it all. Here is my conversation with Jessica McLean. First of all, Jessica, thank you for being here today. I saw you now at the MACPA's Women to Watch Awards recently, and it was a great event, first of all, and really powerful stuff from everyone who was speaking. And you said something that kind of caught my eye, or my ear, rather, during the event. And you said that inclusion comes in many forms. And I wanted you to kind of speak to that a little bit. Tell me what you mean by that.
Sure. And first, Bill, you're right. That event is always, always amazing. I've been going for several years, and it was definitely upsetting we couldn't go in 2020. But glad to be back and appreciated the opportunity to be a panelist this past year. But what I meant by my statement was beyond the diversity aspects that we think of when we see someone physically, mm-hmm. their gender, their skin color, their nationality, there's other aspects to diversity that we don't see. And that's what I talk about. And there's been times throughout my life or even in my career that I haven't felt included mm-hmm. Because of, I think I've mentioned, I went to a public high school. I didn't go to a fancy college or university. My parents didn't have the financial means to send me to study abroad in Italy when I was in college. It was just enough to scrape together scholarships to cover most of my tuition and room and board. And so at times it felt hard to be part of conversations with colleagues because of that. And not as though people were intentionally not being inclusive. With those discussions. But at times I did feel that. And those are some of those other aspects of diversity that we don't always think about because we don't necessarily always see it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of interesting. And I live in a town where people, they walk around all day. You meet somebody new. The first question that usually comes out of your mouth is something along the lines of, where did you go to school? Right.
Yeah.
And by that question, they mean high school. And by asking that question, they're not necessarily interested in the answer to the question, but they're forming all kinds of, they're intuiting things about you based on your answer, right? And I think that mm-hmm. there's a lot of what you're talking about based on that, you know, a simple thing, you know, something as simple as that can kind of lead to this notion of inclusion or not including somebody. Just, you know, based on the answer to just an average, ordinary question. And I think there's more of that kind of floating around our offices and our homes and our towns than maybe we know about or care to think about.
And that's a great point. And you're right. We ask these questions and unconsciously we start to have those biases that come out. Mm-hmm. And not even realizing at times we then can be excluding someone. And I've been guilty of it myself in this area, in the DC area. We are famous for asking where you went to school. And a lot of times it actually means college mm-hmm. because we're a very highly educated area.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, I've had those times where I've asked questions and had to take a step back and say, I know it's part of just our culture here, it seems to be, of asking those questions. And other times I felt it has been with, just the background or history of my family. As an African American, I can only go so far back generationally to understand the roots of where I come from.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard others that can tell the stories of 4, 5, and 6 generations back. And I can't go back that far. Mm-hmm. I mean, I probably could tell you, we probably go back as far as being slaves, as far as, you know, my ancestors, but where from there? I don't know where they're from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't have the ability to share some of those stories as others have, or maybe to go back and say, see, well, this is where my family's from and travel and visit. The closest for me is going to be Mississippi because that's where both of my sets of grandparents are from. It's as far back as I can go.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you had mentioned that at Women to Watch too. You talked about the fact that you're just what, a few short generations removed from family members who were enslaved, right? Is that, am I accurate in saying that?
So I'm 2 generations removed from women that had to pick cotton as children. Mm-hmm. So I'll never forget that story from my maternal grandmother when she talked about picking cotton as a children. By this time, slavery's over. This is the 1920s.
Right.
But it's, again, we talk about the sharecroppers mm-hmm. that worked down in the South. And she talked about as a children, seeing her fingers bleed from picking cotton all day long. She didn't have the opportunity to, let alone finish high school, I think get beyond their sixth or seventh grade. And just two generations later, the change that from the work of my grandparents' generation and the work that my parents put in to where I am now. And I agree. I mentioned in at the event just how grateful that I am and how I know my grandmothers are so proud of being able to take advantage and be offered so many opportunities that they could only have. I can't even say if they even dreamed of them, because in their minds, it would never happen or could never happen. So I can't even say that they dreamed of, because it was never even a thought that crossed their mind of as far as education or traveling or living in a certain size home or driving a certain type of car, the hotel that they can stay in. Because I mentioned before, my grandmother talked about she cleaned rooms in hotels that one, she probably couldn't stay in because she was African-American, or two, probably could never afford to stay in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, given that kind of personal history, Jessica, what does this initiative, within our profession or even beyond, what does that mean to you personally?
It's one thing I talk about with young people, especially young people of color, that are deciding, where do I go with my career? Or I took an accounting class and I may like it and I don't know. And I say it has been life-changing for me. It has brought myself and I know others from a different economic status from just their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And we need the different thoughts, the different mindsets, the different perspectives. I said, we need you.
Right.
We need you. I'm mentoring a young student at Taos University, and I met with him yesterday. And it's funny, he talked about job security. I said, that's one thing I've never had to worry about in this profession, because we are needed. And I said, when I say we, especially again, people of color, different backgrounds, nationalities, and even the things we don't see, economic status, because there's sometimes a misperception that as an African-American, I grew up a certain way. Mm-hmm. And not that my parents were rich. You know, they were very humble middle class living, but again, had the economic means to where I didn't have to live and experience certain aspects or things of life and difficult life situations that others have.
Right.
And so just because, again, we're a certain skin color or come from a certain area doesn't mean we all had the same story or the same path.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so important because we need to bring that perspective, because just because I'm an African-American woman, there's someone that could have those same qualities, but were born in a different area, a different background as far as where they've come from, or where their parents immigrants, or are they immigrants. It can bring a very different perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. You also brought up briefly a point during your remarks about the role of allies and the networks, the people that we surround ourselves with, and the roles that they play in making sure that inclusion is promoted in our workspaces. What are your thoughts there?
Oh, wow. You're right. Part of it is role modeling. And it's so important when it comes to that allyship and sponsorship. Because I say it time and time again, no one gets to where they are alone.
Mm-hmm.
No one. And so whether it's the allyship, the sponsorship, that mentorship is so important. And I also mentioned as far as networking. Now, I was told initially networking is who you know. Then networking is who knows you. But really, networking is having that connection, a strong connection with someone that knows you and is willing to speak for you when you're not in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And that has done wonders for me throughout my career, is that when people are presented opportunities, my name pops up.
Mm-hmm.
And this is coming from, I've had men, women, again, different genders, different races, different backgrounds. It's like, oh, yeah, I recommended you for this or thought you should consider that. And it's like, wow, I would have never thought of that. And for them to think of me, when I'm always appreciative, and that's why I give back so much. And Bill, you know a lot of what I do for the profession, because others have done for me, and there's no way I could be greedy and not share what others have done for me. Absolutely.
Right. How do we go about building those networks or fortifying the networks that we already have with those types of people? Is there some kind of what's the secret behind finding those types of people?
What's interesting is some of the connections that I've made have been virtual. And if because of the pandemic, we couldn't go to networking events. And that's always one of the big ways, is going to a networking event. But to some disbelief, I'm an introvert. So when I do go to networking events, it is draining for me. But for the pandemic, I was able to thrive in a virtual aspect. I would share news about awards or articles or different posts, and people would respond. And we would connect from there. And they would say, oh, you're interested in doing this? Oh, let me connect you with so-and-so here. Or connect me with and say, hey, if you know someone looking for a job, or are you looking for another job as well? Another great story is a young lady reached out to me, this is maybe a little less than 2 years ago. And she said, I'm just so impressed with what I see on LinkedIn. And I am trying to become a CPA. It's what I want to do. And if you could be my mentor, that would be great. So through the pandemic, through me changing jobs, through me getting pregnant and having another baby, I guided her through this process of becoming a CPA. Do you know she passed her last part last week?
Oh, that's fantastic.
I was in tears for her. But that was just from her simply reaching out to me on LinkedIn. I have never even met her in person. She's in the area. I haven't met her in person. But I said, now we're going to go out and we're going to celebrate. And so that's another way of building those networks and those connections. And she sent me a text message the other night and she said, well, you thought you were getting rid of me after passing the four parts of the CPA exam, but you're not. You're stuck with me as my mentor.
So much of it, it seems like it just comes down to something as simple as just helping others, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, Jessica, where do we go from here? I mean, this has been kind of an ongoing conversation for years, decades now in the profession. Where do we go from here in terms of building a truly inclusive profession?
And it's one of those, there's no one thing to do. I think if each person plays their own part and plays a role, because the great force and change that we can have, if we're all doing something, it's not just on one or two people to do it. And so, right, that's mentoring someone and being that motivator for them to become a CPA. It's going to speak at high schools and letting young students know about our profession. It's supporting a colleague who's maybe looking to make a transition within the profession and what they want to do next. They want to leave public accounting and go to a different industry. It's being a sponsor for someone. You see that young person in the office and say, there's something about them. Let me get to know them because I think they can do great things. Mm-hmm. It's those small things that if we all do them, we can make great change. So again, it's not one silver bullet. I've definitely learned that in the work I've done within the profession over the years when it comes to DE&I. But I believe it's a lot of us doing even small things.
Yeah. So I want to close just real briefly, because it's kind of a two-part question here. I'm looking for maybe your top piece or pieces, if you've got more than one, of advice. First of all, for young women, young people of color, young women of color who are, you know, looking to make their mark and build a career in this profession, what kind of advice would you offer them?
I'm going to say the networking, but as I mentioned before, it's about the connection. So it's not just knowing someone and say, I've sent them one message on LinkedIn. It's building connections and communicating to those connections what you're looking to do. No one knows what you want to do unless you tell them. Right. So again, if you want to make the transition from public accounting to a different industry, or you want to be a CFO one day, or sit on the board or volunteer with the MACPA or AICPA, it's connecting with them and letting them know. You'd be surprised the number of people that actually that want to help you. When I've started opening my mouth and telling people, you know, I think I want to do this. I think I want to do that. And just a flurry of help of just, you know, send me a text or send me an email. I'll be glad to help you on that journey. It was just amazing. So again, the networking and connections and telling people what you want to do.
Yeah. And how about for the rest of us? Like best advice for thus people like us who want to help, but don't really quite know where to start. What do we need to do or be aware of that could like make a difference in somebody else's career?
Absolutely. I would say so be mindful of your surroundings. Again, whether you're in the office or listening to conversations, if people are reaching out to you LinkedIn, actually respond. And I'm not saying I can respond to every person that wants me to be their mentor. I can't do that. But it's being part of conversations and connecting with people and listening. Sometimes us experienced folks, we like to go out and just talk and talk all day. Right. But not taking the time to listen to listen to others or a younger generation. Because at times they have great ideas, or you never know who could be, I won't say the next you, because we're all individuals and we're all our own people, but can be that next great person to help within our profession. Because again, as you continue to help, you want to build that next person so they can help and they have the mindset to do the same thing.
I guess I had forgotten that you do have a new job. You've been with what, Girl Scouts now for almost a year? Is that
It'll
right?
It'll be a year next Friday. Yes. Wow,
congratulations.
Thank you.
Tell me how conversations like this are playing out in your role there at Girl Scouts Nation's Capital. How is this type of thing being promoted, if at all, you know, in your new position?
Absolutely. So I'm not the best at sometimes telling others about some of the things that I do, and I'm working on that. And my CEO, my boss, has definitely gotten on me about that. And a few board members and herself have told me, and gosh, they're absolutely right, and that when I share the great things that I've done, especially with the girls that we serve as part of Girl Scouts Nation's Capital, they can't be what they don't see. Mm-hmm. And I am a role model. I could be an influence or a motivating factor in a young girl's life. And so I'm getting better at telling my story.
Yeah, yeah.
Beyond just posting it on LinkedIn, but sharing that success. Because you never know, again, who's listening and who could be motivated by that.
Absolutely. Well, Jessica, listen, thank you so much for taking the time. This has been, as always, great conversation, great talking to you, and I appreciate your insights. Thanks so much for your time.
As always, Bill, thank you so much.
Great talk there with Jessica McClain. She's CFO of Girl Scouts Nation's Capital and a member of both the MACPA and AICPA Foundation boards. If you want to find out more, visit Girl Scouts Nation's Capital at GSCNC.org. You can find out more about the important work that the MACPA and the AICPA foundations are doing to promote greater diversity, equity, and inclusion throughout our profession. You'll find all of that at macpa.org/foundation and then aicpa.org/foundation. And don't forget, this week's show is made possible by our preferred providers, our partners. They're great partners in this profession, and they're doing things that we believe can help you become a little more future ready and thrive in this ever-changing world. And you'll find out more about all of our preferred providers on our website. That's macpa.org/showcase. And that's it, gang. Thanks for being here for another great conversation. I really appreciate it. Have a great week. We'll see you soon.